The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
I was very fortunate to play 23 incredible NFL seasons. So I think there's always the time to move on to other things and other opportunities. And I think for all the NFL players out there that are preparing for the season, I know how much of a grind it is. I know the level of commitment it is, and it's really a year-round process. So if I was going to play football this year, I'd be working entirely different than the way I am now. Right now, I'm catching up on some other priorities, which are much needed. And I'm really looking forward to not getting hit anymore and transitioning to other areas of interest. So I got some fun things on the horizon.
The GOAT has spoken. Much more to come with that exclusive interview with Tom Brady and Jeremy Schapp later in the show as we get started here on NFL Live. But we're going to start with this guy right here, DeAndre Hopkins, who a week ago the Cardinals said they're going to release him. They actually announced it on Tuesday. As of right now, he remains unsigned. And pretty much every team has been mentioned as a possible suitor. We're going to take a listen to some of the sound from coaches around the league who have been asked about him, including his now former head coach, Jonathan Gannon.
Yeah, just, you know, all the factors that were in play, we just felt that it was the best thing for the team to, play with who we have. It's really no big deal to me. You know, we're operating on the premise that he was going to be here, and now we're not. So we're moving on.
Are you intrigued by the potential of DeAndre Hopkins since he is available?
Yeah, I'm not going to comment on that one. But I like our receiver room. You know, I think we got a good mix of different types of guys.
As far as players that are not here, I mean, there's nothing good that comes out of those, you know, out of those answers. And, you know, and definitely, I mean, Hop's a hell of a talent. You know, had a chance to be around, you know, his first Pro Bowl. So I've always had respect for him since his rookie year.
Interesting sound, to be sure. Here's Jeremy Fowler. We've also got our dynamic duo of Mina Kimes and Bill Barnwell here to break it all down. And let's begin with you, though, Jeremy, because you got a lot of coaches who are saying not exactly interested in DeAndre Hopkins' services, at least right now. Who might be?
Yeah, well, Field, I checked in with somebody close to Hopkins who said that he could take some free agency visits here pretty soon and that he's pretty much open for business to the entire league. He's not creating some sort of hard and fast short list here.
Yeah.
Now, teams I talked to believe that the Bills and Chiefs would be favorites here, but they got cap space issues around $2 million each, so they might not have enough to spend. This is a player who wants a fair deal to measure with his skill set. I'm hearing, you know, look, he's willing to be reasonable to get the right contract to the right team. He's willing to be patient here, though. I would consider mini camp a soft deadline,
okay.
Training camp a harder deadline.
So about 2 weeks away from mini camps, call it about 5 weeks from training camp. Yeah. Let's get Mina and Bill involved in the conversation. And Mina, if this were 2018, it's a different conversation surrounding DeAndre Hopkins, but it is now 2023. Yeah. Like, how much does he really still offer a team as a potential wide receiver one?
I still think he has a lot to offer. Even last season, Field, he only played about half of the season, and in those games, many of which, of course, were with backup quarterbacks, he's still ranked in the top 20 in the NFL in yards per route run. He's not an elite separator, but he is an elite pass catcher, incredible hands, feel for space and leverage, human first down. So whether you're a team that wants to compete for the Super Bowl, a team with a lackluster wide receiver core, or a team with a young quarterback who could use a reliable pass catcher, I think any of those types of teams could use DeAndre Hopkins. The bigger question for me is, what does DeAndre Hopkins want? And I think that's what's sort of unknown in all this. What matters to him? Of the types of teams I just mentioned, what does he prioritize? Does he want to compete for a Super Bowl? Does he want to play with an elite quarterback? Or does he want a lot of money, which would be a limiting factor for a bunch of the teams that are contenders? So I think until we have a better sense of that, it's going to be hard to project where Hopkins ends up.
Absolutely, and I think the market was really set here by Odell Beckham earlier this offseason, where he got $15 million, more than $13 million guaranteed from the Baltimore Ravens after missing all of the prior season with a torn ACL. So if you're DeAndre Hopkins and you played last year and you played well last year when you were on the football field, that's kind of your floor, right? Like, you can't accept really anything below $15 million a year. But the problem is, we are this late into the offseason, and the reality is, a lot of teams have already spent most of the money they had budgeted for this offseason. They have to go to their owner and say, hey, you know, we expected to spend this much. Do you have $12, $15 million more for us to add a player of DeAndre Hopkins' caliber? And the reality is, not every single team in the NFL and not many of the teams competing for DeAndre Hopkins are going to say yes to that question.
And, Bill, while we acknowledge that you can always manipulate the salary cap, let's take a look at some teams that do have money available right now. Underneath the cap, the Bears continue to lead the way, as they have for basically the entirety of the offseason. You see the teams all the way down to the Bengals at $14.7 million. We also acknowledge, as Bill has referenced, that, like, it's not just a cap consideration, it's a cash consideration, because even if you don't pay him that money on the cap this year, you are paying him that money in cash, cold, hard cash, out of an owner's pocket. Let's go to Dallas, where this offseason has been defined in many ways by change on offense. Kellen Moore, gone. Head coach Mike McCarthy is going to be the play caller. Zeke Elliott, also gone. Brandon Cooks, he has made his way across Texas from Houston to Dallas via trade. And Mina, as you look back on this offseason, before we hear from Mina, let's dive in and hear from Mike McCarthy.
I'll say this. I mean, obviously, being on offense full time, I really like the look of our group. The vertical speed, we made some improvement there. So you can feel that from our guys. I think clearly Brandon and Terp, I mean, if you watch the way these guys jump out of their shoes, you know, CD, he's having a great offseason. So, you know, Michael Gallup can run with anybody.
All right, now we can talk to Mina after hearing from Mike McCarthy. So, Mina, as we reflect back on this offseason and everything that has been said and everything that has been done, what do you think is the best version of this Cowboys offense?
That's such a great distinction you just made there, Field, what's been said and what's been done. Because I think when there's a switch in play caller, like there is in Dallas, we looked at Mike McCarthy's past, we looked to the things he said. He sounds like a coach who wants to run the football more. And there's been a lot of quotes to that effect. So that's what he has said. But what this team has done is built this roster in a way where they're optimized to throw more than they did last year, when they were one of the teams that ran the most on early downs in the NFL. I mean, consider this. They did not bring in reinforcements at running back after letting Ezekiel Elliott go, outside of drafting a scat back in the sixth round. They let their tight end, Dalton Schultz, walked. And while they did draft the second rounder, Luke Schoonmaker, a lot of people thought they would go earlier or spend money there, and they didn't. And as McCarthy mentioned, they traded for Brandon Cooks. I think the best version of this team has three wide receivers on the field. So while I understand Cowboys fans are like trying to parse out McCarthy's quotes and, you know, get a feel for what this offense is going to look like because of that and the run-pass balance, I think you really have to look at what they've done to get a sense of where they might go this season. And because this is a team that I think is built to spread the ball around.
Yeah, absolutely. And you look at what they have at running back right now. They did franchise Tony Pollard and brought him back. But remember, last year, the Cowboys coaching staff came out and publicly said, we don't want to play Tony Pollard for more than 30 snaps per game. They upped his running usage inside the tackles last year. He was very efficient doing it, but Ezekiel Elliott still bore most of the load inside the tackles a year ago. So you have to figure, unless Ronald Jones really impresses them in camp, unless they really believe in Deuce Vaughn, they still have another addition to make to this roster at running back to help rotate with Tony Pollard. And that player, of course, might be Ezekiel Elliott himself.
It's so funny you mention that, especially now that June 1st has passed, Bill. A lot of teams are sort of taking stock of where things are at with the salary cap. As we just showed you, there are plenty of teams with money to spend, including Dallas, who got a bunch of money from a post-June 1st designation. Let's get to Jeremy, because there are a bunch of running backs that are still available right now. And let's take a look at some of the top running back stories, beginning with Zeke, who, again, still a free agent.
Yeah, Fields, I just checked on this, and I was told Dallas has not completely shut the door on a return for Zeke Elliott. They've left it essentially open all offseason if he wants to come back. So that dialogue could be there. I'm told Zeke loved his time in Dallas, and so if he continues to wait and the right free agency job does not develop, maybe they circle back. The Bucs, once upon a time, I heard maybe had checked in on this, but it never really went anywhere. I don't think teams are spending big money right now on that position. That appears to be the issue. Speaking of running backs, we've got Dalvin Cook here. Unique situation, because I continue to hear from teams that they expect Dalvin Cook to be on a new uniform next year, be it trade or release. The Vikings are certainly open to a trade. They've been willing to hold on to his $14 million cap hit in the short term until something shakes out. Meanwhile, some teams are just waiting for him to be released. I'm told Cook loves Minnesota, but he is open to a new start elsewhere. And then Joe Mixon, this might be the most secure scenario out of the three we just discussed, because my sense is, at least right now, that Mixon is a part of the Bengals' plans, at least in the short term. I know a couple months ago they were weighing their options with all the roster, including all their big money guys, that maybe something could have shook out here with a release, but it just never happened. They just wanted to add one piece to the running back room. They did so in the fifth round of running back Chase Brown. So right now they got the young guys with the established veteran.
Yeah, if you look at the other investments made behind some of those running backs, like Alexander Mattison, for example, in Minnesota, getting a real two-year deal to stay there, feels like that Chase Brown fifth-round pick is less of an investment than probably suggests Joe Mixon is all good in Cincinnati. We're just getting started here on NFL Live. The champs are on the practice field. They're ready to kick off their back-to-back campaign. Did they do enough this offseason to repeat as champions? No one's done it in nearly 20 years. Plus, more from Jeremy Kapp, exclusive sit-down with Tom Brady. Hear from the seven-time Super Bowl champion on how retirement's making him feel.
Relieved. I won't have Aaron Donald trying to chase me down and knock me out. I won't have these guys that are would have gotten paid a lot of money to hit me and knock me on the ground.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
With the first pick in the 2023 NFL Draft, the Carolina Panthers select Bryce Young, quarterback, Alabama.
Couldn't be more ecstatic to be a Carolina Panther. I'm ready to get to work.
This is just day one, but to be able to finally start day one and be able to attack it and be able to start that process, it feels great for me.
We got rookies in minicamps across the league. Let's start with the number one overall pick, who you just saw, Bryce Young in Carolina. Here's his head coach, Frank Reich, had to say about what's impressed him the most.
We want our quarterbacks all need to be fearless, and at the same time, it's always that healthy tension, right, of being fearless but being smart. In the red zone, we think touchdown, check down. There's times as a quarterback when you got to take that chance. It's a tight window. Can I make that throw? Are we going to convert? And then there's time to check it down. You know, that's really the game at quarterback. And we're just starting out as an offense, so we got a long way to go. You know, it's been good. You know, we still got work to do, but everybody's showing progress.
Seemingly all positive sounds so far surrounding Bryce Young. What's the buzz been around him?
Well, it's OTA, so it's always positive. The poise is the word you hear often when you talk to people there in Carolina, that his decision-making or when he walks on the field, he never looks rushed. Everything feels pretty smooth. His energy is always good. And I was told his intermediate to deep balls, whether on air or against the defense, have been pretty good. Like, he's placing them in the right spots, you know, in between, right in the small space where you need to fit it in. So he's been good so far. And I heard an interesting story with Bryce Young pre-draft. They didn't give him a playbook because they didn't tell him he's going number one. So he dug into Frank Reich tendencies. He dug into the old crates, looked at some of what he did with his past offenses, just to make sure.
Have we figured out why they didn't tell him he was going number one overall? We all knew for like 2 months before the draft began. Let's go from Carolina down to Indianapolis and the fourth overall pick. That, of course, is Anthony Richardson. Shane Steichen addressed the media earlier today.
He's been good. You know, I think with anything, you know, guys are going to make mistakes here and there, but you learn from them. You know what I mean? I think he's done a great job of learning from those mistakes and trying not to make those same mistakes twice. You know, I think that's the biggest thing with all players is don't make the same mistake twice, and it's our job as coaches to coach them up and get it right. But he's had a great mindset.
Bill, how do you expect Anthony Richardson to be implemented in the Shane Steichen offense?
Yeah, Field, I think he, you know, Shane brought up the key points there, which is don't make the same mistake twice and do the coaches need to do the job of getting them in situations where they can succeed. And I think that's what's going to happen here. We're going to see the blueprint maybe from what Jalen Hurts did in Philadelphia with Shane Steichen. Get the quarterback involved in the quarterback run game. Use RPOs to define the field and give him quick, easy completions and get him out on the move and get him to use his athleticism growing on the edge.
I can't wait to see him as a runner and a thrower, of course, as well. Yeah. What an athlete he is. Let's go to Atlanta, where head coach Arthur Smith addressed rookie running back Bijan Robinson's impact on the offense. This courtesy the great Green Light podcast. Easy enough for me to say.
With Bijan, I mean, he's a different kind of running back. I mean, that's the thing. Similar to how, you know, we've used Cordell Patterson, but they don't just fit in that certain box. They can play so many different spots. And I feel the same thing about Bijan as we do with Cordell Patterson. They're very different players than Tyler Algier. And the thing about Bijan that stood out is, I've used this analogy, he's a home run hitter.
All right, Mina, we can't wait for Bijan Robinson, but you've recently rewatched a lot of Desmond Ridder film. What'd you find?
Yeah, you know, Desmond's few starts last year, there was some ups and downs, but what I liked watching him, toughness in the pocket, scrambling ability, flashed that in college too, also in the NFL. I thought he looked good on the run, willingness to throw over the middle of the field. Frankly, reminded me a little bit of Ryan Tannehill, which I think explains, one, why Arthur Smith likes Desmond Ridder and why he's the starter this year. It took some people by surprise. And also where this offense needs to go. When Tannehill had his best years with Arthur Smith in Tennessee, they had a dominant run game, much like they should in Atlanta with Bijan Robinson and that crew. And Tannehill had a willingness and ability to take deep shots off of play action. So to me, that's what you want to see next from Desmond Ridder is when there's opportunities, and there will be because of this run game, to attack downfield. Will he take them? Can he connect on them to make the offense more explosive so that it's not just about what they do, you know, on the ground and in the option game?
Absolutely. And I think it's not just about, you know, sort of having these players, but also understanding what they do best. I mean, yes, the Falcons are going to use Bijan Robinson in the slot more than traditional running backs, but is that a thing they can use once a game, three times a game, seven or eight times a game? You know, with someone like Kyle Pitts, he can play. He can split out wide. He can play in the slot. You can move him around. But where is he going to be best used in this offense? How is Tyler Algier going to fit in? How is that split going to work with him and Bijan Robinson? There's plenty of possibilities and potential here, but I think for the Falcons, they have to figure out what's actually best for them to use and how frequently they want to kind of, you know, use those opportunities to use a player out of his traditional role. Maybe it's best to have Bijan in the backfield, Kyle Pitts in line, and Drake London working outside. I think there's going to be a lot of sort of experimentation during the preseason and into the regular season, and hopefully in the second half of the year, that's when the Falcons have everything together and they're clicking on all cylinders.
Yeah, Bill, the completely not bitter dynasty fantasy football manager who has Kyle Pitts, who might or might not be on the show right now, would love to see some of the things that you were just talking about right now, like specifically like all of them being better this year. Can we score a touchdown on American soil? Is that too much to ask out of Kyle Pitts in 2023? Can't wait to see the Falcons, though, on offense. Feels like there is a big step forward coming. Coming up on NFL Live, the Chiefs lost some key pieces after hoisting the Lombardi Trophy last year. But someone here says they might not have added enough to go back. Find out who that is next.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The The Women's College World Series rolls on tonight with two win-or-go-home games. Stanford squares off against Alabama at 7 Eastern, then Utah takes on Oklahoma State. Both games are right here on ESPN, plus the app. Here are the teams that had the best off-seasons, that according to Bill Barnwell himself. The Commanders lead the way, followed by the Dolphins, Cowboys, and Eagles. And he has the Packers, Bengals, and Chiefs as teams that made positive moves this offseason. The entire article is fantastic. Read it on ESPN.com. And who better to discuss it with than Bill himself? And Bill, let's start with Washington. Why do they have the best offseason in your mind?
Well, you know, a lot of these were off-field decisions, but of course this is regarding Daniel Snyder.
Yes.
And the pending sale of the football team. It's just been a rough 24 years. Maybe you have a few bad years here or there. It didn't feel like it was getting any better in Washington. That had been an organization that was one of the league's finest in the 24 years before Snyder got there. More Super Bowl wins in the prior 24 years than playoff wins across Snyder's 24 years in charge of Washington, which by all accounts appears to be coming to an end, possibly before the 2023 NFL season begins.
That is one of the more crazier graphics I've ever seen.
With you.
Yeah.
As far as the quarterback.
The Washington is obviously, I think Bill's absolutely right. They're undeniably an offseason winner for reasons that have nothing to do with football. But as far as the football goes, it's going to be an interesting season for them. It's a little bit transitional with obviously them going with Sam Howell or potentially Jacoby Brissett at quarterback, which is, I think, something frankly nobody really saw coming. Obviously, Howell being a later round draft pick. I will say that the team around Howell is quite good. I loved the addition of Eric Bieniemy as offensive coordinator. I would put that as another reason why they had that great offseason. And I think he knows how to capitalize on Howell's skill set in terms of his rushing ability, his experience with RPOs in college at UNC, something that Bieniemy did very well in Kansas City, and then his strong arm and willingness to attack downfield. So wouldn't be surprised if this offense is more efficient than last year and maybe surpasses some people's expectations.
Let's go from Washington to Miami. And Bill, talk us through the Dolphins, who check in at number 2 on your list.
Yeah, I mean, I love the Dolphins adding Jalen Ramsey to what might be the best cornerback room in football now with Xavier Howard and Kadir Kohou. There's Jalen Ramsey, such a talented player, still only 28 years old. A guy who was celebrating a Super Bowl this time last year, seems to be on a Hall of Fame track, only required a third round pick and a backup tight end and Hunter Long to get him to Miami from Los Angeles. I know there were some teams reticent to commit to him on a long-term extension. Dolphins gave him 2 guaranteed years to get this deal done, but a player who can play in the slot, he can play outside, he's a good run defender, he can play as the star in Vic Fangio, the new defensive coordinator in Miami, in his defense, which is such a critical role for what the Dolphins need to do this season. Xavier Howard's going to be on the outside. There's just so many playmakers in that secondary right now that I feel like they can be a team that competes not just with a great offense now, but also win games strictly with their defense.
How about the health of Tua, Jeremy?
Yeah, Field, I'm told he's completely healthy. There's really no concern there right now from a team standpoint. Tua has been practicing jiu-jitsu to learn how to fall forward to protect his head if he's taking a hit. Well, I was told the Dolphins actually implemented some of those practices into their pre-practice routine with all the quarterbacks to learn how to fall forward to protect that head. And cool story I heard about Tua today. At practice, they were lagging a little bit, a little sloppy. So he stopped practice and drilled into his offensive guys a little bit, like, hey, let's get this going. I was told that that's a leadership quality that maybe 2 years ago, Tua doesn't do.
Seen him develop in that area as well. The Chiefs, number 1 in terms of power rankings, but number 7 in terms of offseason rankings by Bill. So what jumped out to you about their offseason?
Yeah, Field, something we've never seen a Super Bowl winning team do before.
Let's
swap out both of their offensive tackles.
Ever?
They let Orlando Brown leave, let Andrew Wiley leave. You bring in Jawan Taylor from the Jaguars, who you figured was going to move to the left side, but instead they signed Donovan Smith from the Buccaneers. I think they actually upgraded at tackle by going out and adding 2 veteran players who are going to be immediate solid starters on the outside of a very solid interior offensive line. And we know what Patrick Mahomes all you have to do is give him time to throw. Remember that Super Bowl? That's the only time he's really looked bad in the postseason because there was nobody there to block for him. The Chiefs learned their lesson, had a good line last year, might have an even better line this year in front of the reigning MVP and reigning Super Bowl champion.
The change of tackle is really fascinating, not just because, as Bill said, it's unprecedented, which I didn't know for a Super Bowl champion. That's pretty wild. But as you guys remember, when the Chiefs signed Juwan Taylor, there was an assumption that he would replace Orlando Brown Jr. at left tackle. Then we learned, after they signed Donovan Smith from Tampa, that Taylor was going to play right tackle, which is great for the right side of the offensive line because I think he can be one of the best right tackles in football there. My question is whether Donovan Smith can get back playing at the level he was a few years ago, because last season was rough. He was incredibly penalized, had a lot of lapses in pass protection, and I think for Kansas City, you know, for him to play at least at the level of Brown, that would be the minimum. Now, I think that Donovan Smith is going to benefit from playing for Kansas City.
Yes.
He gets to play. He goes from, in Tampa, playing next to, frankly, what was one of the worst interior offensive lines in football on account of all the injuries, to a group with Joe Tooney on the left side, Creed Humphrey and Trey Smith, that I think most people, maybe behind the Eagles, would have as the best interior offensive line in football. So perhaps he'll hold a little bit less if he knows that he's not on an island. I also think the difference in these offenses will really help him in pass protection. The run game is very different from Tampa's, which is a very just straightforward power run game. It's more diverse. I think he might be on the move a bit more. And, you know, I think the scheme also, which is, of course, very dependent on RPOs, can help him too.
Absolutely. And I think he's going to have more help on the other side as well, because the Chiefs are a team that uses a ton of two or more tight end sets. That was one of their big changes last year, moving on from Tyreek Hill. One of the ways they adapted went from using two or more tight ends 29% of the time to more than 44% of the time. And it worked out just fine for the Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes, who was second in the NFL in QBR behind Jalen Hurts, who was awesome as well, when they teams began with two or more tight end sets. So, of course, having Travis Kelce as one of those tight ends, kind of a cheat code, to be fair. But even though the names aren't necessarily big, just having those bodies on the field forces the defense to make some choices about how they're going to defend it, creates mismatches in the passing game, and gives those tackles a little more help as you're blocking for a player in Patrick Mahomes who he likes to extend plays a few seconds here or there if he can.
But doesn't it feel like this could be one of the Chiefs' secret weapons over the next decade or so, is that it's not going to always work out, right? But they're going to be able to acquire players, oftentimes for relative bargains, who are just going to look a whole lot better because of the environment they're playing in Kansas City. I expect that to be the case with Donovan Smith for a deal worth up to $9 million. Hey, coming up next, after a disappointing season, will the Patriots offense get back on track under a new offensive coordinator? Find out why the crew thinks Mac Jones and company could be in for a bounce back season.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.
Here's our next UFC Fight Night Saturday from the Apex in Las Vegas with our flyweight main event. The prelims start at 6 Eastern on ESPN+, followed by the main card at 9 Eastern on ESPN and ESPN+. The Patriots looking to get back on track into the playoffs, with Mac Jones needing more help after struggling in his second season. He posted a total QBR that was 28th in the NFL. The team started by hiring Bill O'Brien as their offensive coordinator. He was previously on the staff for 5 years, from 2007 to 2011. They also got Mac Jones two more pass catchers in free agency, signing Mike Gesicki, plus Juju Smith-Schuster. The quarterback talked about what Juju will bring to the offense in Foxborough.
I think Juju's done a great job. Also from a leadership standpoint, just coming in, that's someone who adds veteran leadership from different places. He just came off of a Super Bowl team, so what a great value to our offense.
What's the process been like so far with Bill O'Brien coming in and getting to know each other?
Yeah, it's been really good. It's been normal. I think everything he's done so far has been really good. I think the communication is the most important part. When we talk about lingo, it's like there's things we both say and it makes sense. So that's important. But at the end of the day, football is football, and we're kind of building our own thing here and utilizing the guys that we have.
Bill, what do you think the biggest key to getting this Patriots offense back on track will be this year?
I think it's creating simple, easy completions for Mac Jones in the passing game. And that leads me to RPO, something Mac Jones did at an incredibly high level in his star season at Alabama that year. These numbers are like Madden, like difficulty levels, too low numbers. 71 of 76 for 868 yards. Yes, 71. When your completion percentage starts with a nine, you're doing something good at quarterback. So you figure Patriots are going to incorporate that into their offense. Hasn't really happened. Year one, 32 RPOs. Year two, only 21 RPOs for Mac Jones, even though they play more games in the pros, of course, than they play in college. So Bill O'Brien didn't cross paths with Mac Jones in Alabama, but they do have a shared language. They come from the same school. Bill O'Brien did call plenty of RPOs in Alabama during his time there as OC for the past couple of years. So you figure that's going to be the sort of the transition point where it does make sense for Bill O'Brien to call RPOs for Mac Jones and just build Mac Jones's confidence after a very, very messy 2022 season.
Bill, I wasn't on camera while you were talking there, but if I was, you would have seen me nodding so vigorously, my head almost snapped off. Yes, RPOs, more RPOs, all of the RPOs. For the reasons you outlined, Mac Jones is good at them. I think they make the most of his skill set in terms of his accuracy and his decision-making as a quarterback. But it also fits well with the personnel that the Patriots have on their roster. Look, much to the consternation of this fan base, they do not have, in my opinion, a true number one wide receiver. Mm-hmm. What they do have is a number of skill players who are perfectly tailored for RPOs. They went out and they signed Mike Gesicki, tight end, who's basically a big-bodied wide receiver who can catch them over the middle of the field. Juju Smith-Schuster, who also works over the middle of the field, gets open quickly and gets you yards after the catch. And I think even Tyquan Thornton, who's the speedster they drafted last year, can be useful on screens and downfield. Vertical RPOs, I think of Miami and what they did with Tua, should be a part of this offense. It makes the most of these players' abilities, and as you said, it makes life easier for Mac Jones, because last year there just simply weren't enough easy answers in the offense for him. And I think that's one way to very quickly give him answers against different coverages.
It sure seemed like Mac Jones was a much more relaxed version of himself when that sound that we saw earlier, Jeremy. Yeah. And do a squash this now? No quarterback competition right
when
now
in
Foxborough?
When I check on it, I'm told no. Now, Belichick, the most unpredictable coach in the league, does he want to do something crazy? Maybe. But Mac Jones showed up in good shape, throwing the ball well. It seems to be no issue here.
It certainly seems like this is Mac Jones' team. And frankly, if they're going to be at their best and competitive in this division, it needs to be Mac Jones' team. Hey, still to come, Jeremy Schapp sat down with Tom Brady, who, after becoming the greatest quarterback of all time on the field, now tries his hand as an executive.
To be involved in an organization is a dream come true. I never envisioned that growing up. This is something that I look forward to being involved with for the rest of my life.
After retiring for the second time, this will be the first season since 1999 without Tom Brady in the NFL. How different was the league back then? The Texans didn't exist. Andy Reid, you see him over here, was in his first season as a head coach, and none of the top three quarterbacks in this year's draft were even born. And to make us all feel just a little bit older, the number one song in 1999 was Believe by Cher. Brady, recently retired, caught up with our Jeremy Schapp yesterday.
So, Tom, it's been a few months now since you announced your retirement. Why was this the right time to walk away for good?
I was very fortunate to play 23 incredible NFL seasons. So I think there's always a time to move on to other things and other opportunities. And I think for all the NFL players out there that are preparing for the season, I know how much of a grind it is. I know the level of commitment it is, and it's really a year-round process. So if I was going to play football this year, I'd be working entirely different than the way I am now. Right now, I'm catching up on some other priorities, which are much needed. And I'm really looking forward to not getting hit anymore and transitioning to other areas of interest. So I got some fun things on the horizon.
What are some of those priorities?
Certainly my family. You know, I think being a dad is probably the greatest responsibility I have. And you know, my kids are getting older. I have a 15-year-old who is into all his own stuff. I loved being a part of kind of his spring sports, his winter sports. I was able actually to make it up last year to some of his football games in the fall. And then I have two little ones. And then I have some other business things, obviously, working on my my Fox broadcasting opportunity, which I'm really looking forward to next year. And then I know we're in the process of trying to invest in a minority share in the Raiders. So I'm still a part of football. It's just going to be in a little bit of a different way, but still looking to make contributions in those areas to those teams just in a different way than I did as a quarterback, but still very excited about both of them.
As we get closer to the season, how do you think it's going to feel?
Relieved. I won't have Aaron Donald trying to chase me down and knock me out. I won't have these guys that would have gotten paid a lot of money to hit me and knock me on the ground. I do have a record for being sacked more than any other quarterback in NFL history, which maybe somebody will break that record someday, but I got a lot of bumps and bruises to show for 23 great seasons. But, you know, I certainly won't miss that, but that's okay. I had an amazing experience. And again, it's time, the game's in great hands. It's time, you know, for other guys to do it. And you know, I saw Peyton retire. I saw all these guys that I looked up to, Brett Favre retire. And, you know, now I'm just a retired NFL player and looking forward to watching these young guys continue to be great, you know, representatives of their teams, their communities, and of their families as they move forward in their career.
Tom, September 10th, Gillette Stadium. The Patriots will be honoring you in their home opener in their opening game of the season. 3 months out, how are you preparing emotionally for that ceremony?
Yeah, it was such a kind gesture by RKK, who I've been in touch with, you know, since Robert the season Beck. Ended. And, you know, we've always had a great relationship. From the moment that I stepped foot in Foxborough, you know, I've cherished that opportunity. And I've always felt like I've been a member of that organization. And I know my football journey took me to Tampa for 3 years, which I absolutely loved. And then when that ended, I had the opportunity to really reconnect with RKK on a personal level. And he thought this was something that the fans would really enjoy. And obviously, I want to go back there and see the fans. I want to see my teammates. I went back there one time. It was in opposing uniform, which was, you know, a different type of welcoming, although people were very polite and I had a great experience. But I'll be able to go back there in a different frame of mind and a less competitive frame of mind. And I'm always pulling for the Patriots. It's been a great organization. I've got so many friends there still. My kids were born in Boston. I have so many incredible memories of my time there. And it's a great gesture by the organization.
Obviously, Bill Belichick's going to be there. He was your coach for 20 years. How would you describe your relationship with him now?
Well, I was very fortunate to play with him and be a member of those teams. And with him and his leadership and his ability to coach and put our team in a great position to succeed, I think we had a great relationship. He very much trusted what I was doing out there on the field. And obviously, it went both ways. I knew that he did everything he could to prepare our team for what we needed to do to go out there and be successful. And I think
ultimately our success was because so many people in the organization, as Coach Belichick always said, did do your job. That's what everybody did, you know, and I tried to do my job, which was quarterback and leader and all the things that come with being a quarterback. His job was to be a leader and head coach and make really critical decisions. And I think we always had a great amount of respect for each other. And I think as time goes by, we'll have more respect for one another because there'll be more perspective on those things. And I learned so much from him. I'm taking a lot of things that he taught me in terms of his leadership into the different opportunities that I have in front of me. And I still have a lot of, hopefully a lot of life ahead where I'll be able to make a difference, you know, not only on the team that I have in Fox, but hopefully the team that I'm involved in with the Raiders, along with some of the other cool business professional things I have going.
You mentioned your kids. You mentioned your older son, Jack. He's 15. He's a quarterback. What are your hopes for him in this game? And what are your concerns about being in this game?
You know, I hope he finds the things in his life that allow him to get up every day to be internally motivated to work hard at something that he loves to do. I don't think football, and a lot of it, I wouldn't choose for him to do that because there's too many crazy expectations that people would put on him. Most of them probably very unfair, actually. So whatever path he chooses in life, or my son Benny or my daughter Vivi, whatever they choose, I'm there to support him just like my dad supported me. I was very lucky to find something I found that I love to do. And I grew up in the Bay Area and I looked up to those great 49er teams of the 80s and 90s. And they were a big part of the reason why I ended up falling in love with the sport. And I had parents there that were to support my football journey by bringing me to camps and bringing me to, you know, throw at the football field late at night and early in the morning and bring me to workouts and support my dream. And I think that's what we as parents should do. We support our children's dreams, whatever they may be. It doesn't need to be sports. It could be whatever. It could be performing arts. It could be music. It could be, you know, science. It could be law. It could be medicine. So, you know, I think that's part of being a parent is supporting your kids' dreams. And you know, now that I've got more time on my hands, I'm very much looking forward to doing that as well.
And Tom, now, as you mentioned, you're poised to become an owner, part owner anyway, of that team that spent so long on the other side of the Bay, the Las Vegas Raiders, and also the aces of the WNBA in partnership with Mark Davis. What kind of role do you see for yourself as a limited partner, a part owner of those teams?
Well, just that for the time being. You know, again, I have a big responsibility with Fox I'm looking forward to, but I also want to be involved in the NFL for the next 45 years of my life, if I last that long. I've made it 45 years. I've really enjoyed the opportunity that I've had, and to be involved in an organization is a dream come true. I never envisioned that growing up, like I said, in San Mateo as this kid in Portola Drive that would, you know, be playing football with my buddies all day, and to be involved in the NFL for hopefully as long as I possibly can is a dream come true. So this is something that I look forward to being involved with for the rest of my life.
One of the things you're doing now, you're working with Hertz, as you have been for the last couple of years. You've been focusing on its electric vehicle fleet, and you're appearing with us courtesy of Hertz. What are the key goals of the Hertz EV initiative?
You know, it's a great company. It's a great American company. I think they're an industry leader in what they're doing. They've transformed their whole fleet of cars into more environmentally conscious vehicles. They've made a huge investment in Tesla cars and Polestars, and I think they're making this experience of renting and, you know, getting from your plane to your rental car to your location is a real kind of hospitality experience. So I've loved working with them. Hopefully the consumers out there have enjoyed some of the comedic, fun, short form video that we produced. And I think there's more of those things to come.
All right, great stuff there between Jeremy and Tom Brady. But speaking of the other Jeremy Fowler, can we put to bed the idea that Tom Brady might return at some point this season?
Yes.
Sounds like that was a guy who was content with his decision, right?
That was as decisive as you can get. He's making the tour telling everybody who will listen that he is retiring. So
but
I'm taking off the
you
table.
Know what's
I'm putting a bow
happen,
on TB12.
Right? Okay, you know what's going to happen, though, right? Jimmy Garoppolo might have a game where he struggles in September, and all of a sudden everybody's going to be saying, he's right there, right? He's sitting right there. He could possibly just come down from the corporate offices and get on the field again. Tom Brady is done playing football. Hey, speaking of GOAT quarterbacks, it's time for one more thing. And Peyton Manning joined Stephen A. Smith last night and shared his thoughts on Aaron Rodgers.
As an aside, while I got you here, I'd be remiss in neglecting to ask a football question. How you feel about Aaron Rodgers as a New York Jet?
I like Aaron Rodgers for the Jets.
Because?
He's excited.
I like the fact that he knows the system. Hackett's the coordinator. Aaron's going to be able to speak the language. He's going to be able to know the system better than anybody in that huddle. He's going to be able to play fast. He's not going to be thinking out there. And I saw him recently at the Kentucky Derby. I can tell he feels rejuvenated. I like the Jets this year.
All right, so Rodgers is going to try to join a list of the most touchdown passes by a quarterback in his first season with a new team in NFL history. Bill, do you think he will surpass Matthew Stafford, who had 41 with the Rams in 2021?
So, and it's not because of Aaron Rodgers, but because of the receivers around him. Remember, it took Devontae Adams 5 years to get a 1,000-yard season with Aaron Rodgers, and Devontae Adams is incredible. Garrett Wilson going to be the focal point of that offense. Just think it's going to take time for them to develop that rhythm, that chemistry, that improvisation, especially inside the red zone.
What do you think, Jeremy?
I'm going to go just short of that.
Okay.
Matthew Stafford, he had Cooper Kupp. At the time, Cooper Kupp pretty much became the premier receiver in the league alongside Devontae Adams. I like the Jets' receiving core. I just got to see a little bit more. This is a team that's still coming of age a little bit. Maybe needs a few more veterans around him. And Rodgers was not great last year. So I'm not assuming that he's just going to put up lightning numbers. I think he's going to be very good, though. Much improvement.
You know, I'd have to go back and check how that Rams schedule looked at the beginning of the time that they had Matthew Stafford. But you think back to it. Think to the Jets schedule out of the gates. Bills, Cowboys, Patriots, Chiefs. No easy defensive foes in the first month of the season. As we say goodbye to you on NFL Live today, a special happy birthday shout-out to Nick, our technical director, a big part of what we do here on the show on a daily basis.